yesteryear.
Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And here's Occidental's own Ma Perkins again, the true life story of a woman whose life is the same, whose surroundings are the same, whose problems are the same as those of thousands of other women in the world today. A woman who'd spent all her life taking care of her home, washing and cooking and cleaning and raising her family. And now, her husband's death pitched her head foremost into being the head of the family as well as the mother. And we'll hear her true life story every day at the same time, except Saturday and Sunday. Before we hear from our Perkins today, though, I want to tell you about something else for a minute that will be of vital interest to every housewife listening. About a remarkable new laundry soap discovery that actually makes any other kind of laundry soap old-fashioned and out of date. It's the new, improved Oxidol, spelled O-X-Y-D-O-L, Oxidol. It embodies the latest scientific discovery of the world's greatest soap makers, the Procter & Gamble Company. Whatever soap you've been using in the past, whether it's a granulated soap, a soap flake, or a bar soap, you owe it to yourself to try this new, improved Oxidol. For it makes washing easier, gets the washing done faster, and is safer for colors and fabrics than any other laundry soap now or ever known. Here's what Oxidol will do for you under guarantee of the world's greatest soap makers. Oxidol will wash your clothes 25 to 40% faster, whether you use a tub or the latest improved washing machine. It washes clothes 4 to 5 shades whiter by actual scientific tests than any other soap can do, and absolutely without scrubbing or boiling. And remember that even your best cotton prints and your children's dainty frocks are safe in mild, thick Oxidol suds, because it embodies a new discovery which keeps all the fast washing and whitewashing qualities in the soap and leaves all the harshness out. It's safe for colors, safe for fabrics, and yet so kind to your hands that, well, you're simply amazed at its cleansing power. And now we find Ma Perkins just where we left her yesterday. She's had a quarrel with Evie and refused to help Evie's husband, Willie Fitz, in any way. Told Evie to come home and live with her. And then Evie ran out of the house. And Ma's standing in the little parlor wondering what to do next. Listen.
Ma? Ma? What's happened? Where's Evie?
She's gone, see?
Gone? Ma, what did you say to her?
I heard her crying down here. I wanted her to come back home here with us.
Oh, what are you talking about? You surely don't want Willie Fitz and her and Junior here with us. There wouldn't be room for all of them.
I didn't want Willie Fitz. I just wanted her and Junior.
What do you mean? You wanted her to leave Willie Fitz? But he's her husband, Ma. She couldn't do that.
Well, why not? That's what I'd like to know. Wouldn't be the first time a woman ever left her husband. And she'd be a lot better off here with us than with that no-account scallywag. That's what I told her, too.
Oh, Ma. You didn't. What's really done that's so terrible?
He's got himself mixed up so bad with Sam Green that he'll never be able to get out of it. And Evie wanted me to help him, just like I helped him before. It's $1,000 this time. Nowhere I'm going to get no $1,000.
And you wouldn't help him? Oh, Ma, no wonder Evie ran away. You wouldn't help her?
Oh, tain't that, say, child. I'd do everything I could for Evie. But it ain't Evie that's in bed. It's Willie. Willie Fitz. And I said I wasn't going to help him.
But, Ma, what's going to happen to Evie? Oh, what is it that Willie did?
He forged Sam Grimm's name.
He forged Sam Grimm's name? Oh, Ma. Not Willie. He wouldn't do anything dishonest.
He'd done it just the same. And now Sam Grimm's aiming to make him pay for it. Or rather, trying to get me to pay for it. That's why he came to see me at the lumberyard today. He was figuring that maybe I'd help Willie and give him $1,000.
$1,000? Oh, Ma, whatever are we going to do?
We ain't going to do nothing, Faith. Willie fits his matey's bed. Now just let him lie in it. I ain't got $1,000. There ain't no way of getting it.
What's going to happen to Willie?
Sam Grimm says he's going to send him to jail.
Jail? Oh, Ma, you can't let him do that. You can't let him send Willie to jail. Well, just think how Evie would feel. Just think how terrible it would be for her. Her husband in jail.
I'm thinking she'd be better off without him, Faye, child. He's brought her nothing but trouble ever since they've been married.
But, Ma, can't you see? Evie's got to stick by him. You wouldn't want her to do anything else.
I know I don't want her wasting her life on anybody so no-count and worthless as Willie Fitz is. She'll be well rid of him.
Oh, Ma, you can't mean what you're saying. I know just how Evie feels. At a time like this, just when she needs help, to have her own mother turn her down. Oh, Ma, you can't.
Who said anything about turning Evie down? Well, I love her just as much as I ever did. It's her I'm thinking about. Why should she go along tied to anybody like Willie Fitz? What's he ever brought her? What's he ever done for her? That's what I'd like to know. She'd be lots better off without him.
Oh, Ma, you can't mean that. You simply can't. Why? How do you suppose Paul would have felt if that was the way he acted towards him? If just when you needed him most, you left him.
And a Goshen thing. Don't be comparing Paul with anybody like Willie Fitz. They ain't a bit alike.
But, Ma, can't you see that Evie feels just the same way about Willie? She wouldn't want to leave him. Can't you realize that?
If I had her back here with us, we could take care of her. For her and the little Willie, too.
You're not fair to her, Ma. You're asking her to desert her husband just when he needs her most. She wouldn't do it, Ma. No woman would do it. You wouldn't do it yourself.
I don't call Willie no husband. It's been me. Me and Paul that have been helping her ever since she's married. All Willie ever did is strut around and talk big.
I know, Ma, I know. I'm not defending Willie. It's Evie I'm asking you to think of.
I am thinking of her, Faye, child. Don't I want her back here so that I can take care of her? What I care what happens to that Willie Fitz. Let Sam Graham put him in jail.
But, Ma, can't you see what that does to Evie? Will's her husband. She's proud
ain't
of him.
Nothing in Willie Fitz to be proud of. She'd be better off away from him. Yes, a lot better off.
Wait a minute, Ma.
What is it, Faith?
There's somebody on the porch.
Oh, Evie. Maybe it's Evie coming back.
No, it's not Evie. Oh, it must be John. I hear him unlocking the door. Oh, John.
Ma, Faith, what's the matter with Evie? I was standing down at the corner in front of the drugstore and she ran past. And she was crying. What's the matter with her?
Oh, John, they're in terrible trouble, her and Willie.
Good Lord, what's Willie Fitz done anyhow?
He forged Sam Grimm's name on some papers. That's what he did.
Forged Sam Grimm's name? What?
Yeah, that's what Evie told me, John.
But how did he ever do that? How did he do it?
Evie told me. Sam gave him some stock or something to take over the bank to old man Pendleton. And Pendleton told Willie that he knowed Sam wanted to sell it. So he made Willie sign Sam's name. And I guess he sold it. Then the next day, the stock went up a lot of money, and Sam found out what Willie had done. He wanted the difference in the money. About $1,000.
Of all the chump tricks. Well, what's Willie going to do?
He ain't got any $1,000. Sam Grimm's going to send him to jail for forgery.
Sam Grimm's going to send him to jail? Oh, but it wasn't Willie's fault, Ma. I can see that. He was just doing what Pendleton told him to do. He didn't get anything out of it.
It's the same. He forged Sam Grimm's name. It's a crime, I guess.
Well, sure it is, but don't blame Willie. If Pendleton told him to do it...
I can see now how Sam Grimm expected to get me in on it. He figured I'd help out Willie and give him $1,000. And he knows the only way I got to get him $1,000 would be to mortgage the lumberyard down at the bank. Sam Grimm and that Pendleton are just trying to get hold of the lumberyard.
Well, what are you going to do, Ma?
What do you mean, John?
Well, you'll have to help Evie out. What are you going to do?
I told you what I was going to do, son. I ain't going to do nothing. If Willie Fitz wants to get himself in such scrapes, it ain't none of my concern, and I ain't going to have it any of my concern. Willie's made his bed, now I can lie in it.
Ma, you've got to help Evie.
Why, of course you do, Ma. You can't let Sam Grimm pull off anything like that. Sending Willie to jail. Why, the very idea.
I ain't going to do nothing for Willie Fitz. I told Evie so, too.
Huh?
That's right, John. She told Evie she wouldn't do anything for Willie.
Well, Ma, you don't mean you'd let Sam Grimm send Willie Fitz to jail. Your own son-in-law?
I don't care what happens to Willie Fitz, son. Let Willie take care of himself. Evie's the only one I'm worried about.
But, Ma, you can't do that. You have to help her. My good Lord, who's going to help the poor kid if you don't? They're in a jam, and you got to help them get straightened out.
Not Willie Fitz. I ain't going to do nothing for him. I told Evie what she could do, and she ought to do it, too. I told her she and Junior could come back here and live. I told her we'd get along.
All right. You want her to leave Willie Fitz?
Of course I do. What'd he ever do for Evie? She's had nothing but grief and heartache ever since she's been married to that worthless no-account Willie Fitz.
Oh, but, Ma, think how Evie's going to feel if Willie's arrested. I'd like to know how you'd feel. Your husband arrested, in jail. I wonder what you'd say.
It'll be bitter for her if she gets away from him.
And think of poor little Junior. His father, a jailbird. How's he going to like that, do you think? And Evie. Why, the poor kid'll be all broken up now. Just one more trouble being piled on what she's got already. Why, she'll be ashamed. She won't be able to look at people when she passes them on the street.
She'll be all right if she gets back home here where she belongs. I know she will.
Her husband in jail. Well, that's a fine outlook she's got.
Willie Fitz has got to realize he's got to settle down.
Oh, no, you've got to do something for Evie.
Why, sure you do.
I am doing something for her. I told her what she could do. I told her she and Junior could come back here and live with us.
You think that's helping her, Ma?
Well, I don't know what else is, son. Leastways, she have a roof overhead. She never was sure of that with Willie Fitz.
You're not helping her, Ma. You're hurting her. That's all you're doing. You're just hurting her.
John, don't say a thing like that. Why, I wouldn't hurt a hair on one of your heads. You know that.
It's the same you're hurting, Evie.
I'm not, John. I'm doing what's best for her. I thought I was hurting her.
But you are, Ma. That's just what you're doing.
Of course you are, Ma. That's what I've been trying to tell you. Don't you see that Evie's married to Willie? That she's got to stand by him? And you want her to quit.
I wonder what you would have said if your mother had ever come to you and asked you to leave Pa.
I wouldn't have done it. But Pa was different. Pa wasn't no Willie Fitz.
You stuck to him through thick and thin, though, didn't you, Ma? You wouldn't have left him for anything. And yet that's just what you're asking Evie to do. You're asking her to do something that you know deep down in your heart you wouldn't do yourself.
John's right, Ma. Just think if you would ever have done what you're asking Evie to do tonight.
Well, you've got to help her, Ma. We've all got to help her. It's just tough luck that Willie's in another scrape. But we've got to get him out of it. Not for Willie, but for Evie's sake.
Sure, Ma. Ma, you're crying.
I'm all right, see.
Ma, what is it? What's the matter?
You're right. I've been wrong. Evie's husband and her little boy should be just as much a part of me as she is. Because they're hers.
Well, what are you going to do? Just go on the telephone.
Willie's a mutt getting in anything like that. But we'll have to get him out of it. We can't let Sam Grimm put anybody belonging to the Perkinses in jail.
Of course we can't.
Hello, operator. Get me 738. Yeah, that's right. 738.
Ma, you're calling Evie.
Yeah, honey.
Let me talk to her, too, Ma. She probably needs a little cheering up.
We won't talk to her at all, John. We don't want to let on that we know anything about it. Hello? Evie? Is your ma, Evie? Are you going to be home for a while? Yes. Everything's all right. Your ma's been wrong, Evie. She's coming over now to help you. Yeah, and help your Willie, too.
And so Ma Perkins has a change of heart at last. Realizes what mothers have found since the world began. That you can't run other people's affairs for them. You can't make them do what you think is best. You've just got to help them. And speaking of help, there's no household job that needs outside help more than washing clothes. Good intentions won't get clothes clean. If you don't use the best soap, well, you just wear yourself out and get a gray, disappointing wash. But suppose every time you washed clothes, they came out fresh and sparkling white, colors unfaded, and everything smelling sweet and fresh and clean. It's almost a joy to do work then when you get the right results. And that's the kind of wash you'll get if you use Oxydol laundry soap. For Oxydol is made a new way, made by Procter & Gamble, to be the world's fastest washing, whitest washing, and safest washing laundry soap. The soap thousands of women are changing to every week. And Ma Perkins will be with us tomorrow afternoon at the same time over the same station when we'll hear what happened in Willie Fitz's house after Ma arrived. Until then, this is Bob Brown saying goodbye. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Ma Perkins, as the program sounded when it was brand new on Wednesday, December 13th, 1933.
For 27 years and 7,065 episodes, Virginia Payne was Ma Perkins. Just before Christmas in 1971, between performances of a play appearing at the Huntington Hartford Theater in Hollywood, Miss Payne took time to remember the story of Ma Perkins.
The town where Ma Perkins lived and the locale was called Rushville Center. Rushville Center, USA. It never had any specific location, and people all over the United States claimed it. The town was more or less, I should say, everyone's ideal small town. The small town that if you had come from, you would like to go back to. And Ma Perkins ran a lumber yard, the Perkins Lumber Yard. And she was supposed to be a lady of 65 years or thereabouts. And she was a widow. And she had three children, two daughters and a son. And the early theme was a good women's liberation theme. Can a woman sustain herself and carry on a business in a man's world? And of course, Ma said, yes, yes, right on. The daughters were Faye and Evie and her son, John. And they, over the years, they were played by many people. For example, in the tryout stage, which was 16 weeks at WLW, the daughter, Faye, was played first by Isabel Crabill, and then when we went to the network, by Marjorie Hannon. The son was played by Jack Zoller, who later became a producer, and for whom I worked at, when I went to New York in Cavalcade of America. Many, many people followed these people. There are a long list of Fays and Johns and Evies. John was played for many years by Gil Faust, who was also a producer here in Hollywood. Shuffle was Ma's partner in the lumberyard. At first, he was a handyman, an employee of the lumberyard, and then he became a partner. And he was Ma's contemporary and great friend. Pa, her husband, was dead. So that Shuffle was her great friend and consultant, guide, counselor, and friend. And it was superbly played by a man named Charles Eggleston, who celebrated 50 years in the theater. He was older than I was, and he unfortunately died the last year of our broadcast, before we went off the air. But he was with us from the first broadcast almost till the time of his death, which was the year before we went off the air. And the son-in-law, Murray Forbes, played. His name was Willie Fitz. He played it throughout the time of the network broadcast. Those were the principals. Yeah. We had Junior was the young son, the child of Evie and Willie, and Paulette, the daughter of Faye. But those changed constantly because as the children were growing up, they were always outgrowing the parts. They were always having to be recast by someone more the age. There were some 50 characters a year who appeared in incidental roles. So there were many, many people with us. We had some fine actors over the time. John Hodiak appeared with us and did a sequence. John Larkin played Tom Wells. He was a very fine actor. Larry Blyden played Billy Pierce. Long run Tony Randall played with us and did an excellent characterization. Wesley Addy played with us, Frank Fenton, for a while. Essentially, they were townspeople. There would be the editor of the newspaper, and there would be Alf Pierce was the dairyman and of the town, and there would be the telegrapher at the station, and there would be workers in the bank, and friends, Dr. Stevens, important personages within the town. It went on the CBS network at 12:15 at Chicago time, which would have been 1:15 Eastern Standard Time, and, of course, California in the morning. That's probably why you think of it in the morning. And then in the afternoon, it went on the NBC network at 3:15 in the afternoon. And then we did a prayer recording, a live prayer recording each day, which was sent to independent stations. We went to the whole Canadian network, and we went to independent stations. Unfortunately, because there was no criticism of the daytime dramas, they were all lumped together. I think there were many which were maudlin, thin-plotted, and impossible. But many of them went off the air very quickly, or, you know, went for a few years and didn't sustain. I have a strong feeling that that most of those which sustained over a long period had something which interested people, because, after all, the audiences were among the millions, and they were, as you can see, over a tremendous stretch of geographical territory, so that you can't think that throughout Canada and the United States, millions of people were complete idiots who just listened to any old thing which happened to be on. There again, they had choice. The ratings were very much fought for. We would fight for a tenth of a point in the ratings. It meant that they had wide choices of what they would listen to. And when they chose to listen to something like our program for 27 successive years, over 52 weeks a year, you had a feeling that there must be some reason why they listened. We hated that term, soap operas. It was always contemptuous. I never think any kind of success is accidental. I believe that the values in our own program were sound. It didn't have a foolish plot. It was an idealized setting, but it moved from a concept of a little town which was in process of change and growing. And as the story progressed, you saw the changes within the town itself. I've had occasion to speak to many professors and students who were writing theses, and we've talked very often about the fact that the daytime dramas were, in a sense, folk drama. They mirrored the mores and the ideals of the culture of the particular time. In the early days, in the 1930s, you see, when we were just emerging from the Depression, one of the favorite plots was a mortgage, which was held by the bank, and the banker was held as something of a villain because he was always foreclosing mortgages, because this was happening over the country. This was a real consideration. And the idea of a mortgage held over the lumberyard was of paramount importance to Ma, to be able to meet the payments in the lumberyard and so on. As the changes of the federal government and the insurance, the FHA insurance, and other things, the social programs came into being, these ceased to be plots. You see, they were no longer plots, because they weren't valid anymore. So you'll notice that drops out of the thing. A great danger at that point was a fire to the lumberyard. We had a sequence of a fire in the lumberyard, which of course represented a real danger, as it does to any lumberyard. And as the insurance provisions changed, and you could be more thoroughly protected against that, that ceased to be the kind of plot. The plots, for example, mirrored World War II and the conditions of life on the home front during that period.
It saves lives.
Of course, Mrs. Perkins, but
The Red Cross needs money, a lot of money. But what's money when the lives of our sons, sweethearts, husbands, and fathers are at stake?
Well, we all know that, Mrs. Perkins. Of course we do.
We know it, yes, but the question is, what are we going to do about it, Mr. Pendleton? We give blood, and that blood goes into plasma that might save our very own soldier's life.
But really, Mrs. Perkins,
won't be saved, not if you don't get that plasma. And it takes dollars to have it there the minute he might need it.
Naturally.
If the Red Cross workers are willing to risk their lives to take it there, we ought to be willing to back them up with dollars.
Oh. Well, how much? How much?
And if we don't put up a few measly dollars... Oh, how much did you say, Mr. Pendleton?
Well, I thought maybe...
Would $50 be all right? I think that should be adequate.
$50? Oh, now, Mr. Pendleton, the banker of the town.
Well, $100? I'm sure that $100...
Oh, $150. Couldn't you make it a little more, Mr. Pendleton? I'm afraid you don't realize this is for our boys.
Well, 200...
Five? $500, Mr. Pendleton. But, of course, only for a starter, Mr.
And then at the end of the war, in the 40s, and this is at the end of World War II, in the 40s, we had the consideration of the returning veterans. Ma's son was a veteran, and we had the problems which confronted the veteran and the young family in trying to reestablish themselves. And the changes within the town itself began to show as industry moved into the city, and there was a change within the population. For example, when we began, the names were Perkins, Smith and Jones and Brown and names of that type. And we tried to show the changing character of a town and bring in various nationalities, second generation Lithuanians and Bohemians, and this kind of second generation American who brought another richness to the story. This was an aim of our program, to help to integrate these people into what was thought of as a Simon Pure American Society of such simple names. Lonnie Konvalinka was the name of the station, the gas station attendant. And this seems simple now in retrospect, you see, because our situation is different. But at the time in which we were doing it, we kept trying to push back the frontiers and include more and more people and show how America in the large and the small town, Rushville Center in particular, was changing its character and its face. And then there was a change in the educational scene. There was a situation in which Esther Matthews, a girl of the town, opened a nursery school in answer to a need of daycare centers and nursery schools for working mothers and so on. But the position of the family doctor changed. We had an old doctor, Dr. Stevens, our equivalent of Marcus Welby, M.D. And it showed the change in his status as a very personal doctor of the community, and then into more recent medical practices and the change in relationship between patient and doctor, etc. We received an award from the Association for the Blind because of our representation of a disease which caused much infant blindness. It was called ribrolental fibroplasia. And we had a whole sequence about that, where a baby was born blind to Gladys Pendleton, one of the leading characters. Gladys Pendleton was the banker's daughter and a very rich, spoiled girl who had had every advantage in her life. And she had had almost a perfect life. And then when this baby was born to her blind, the idea of accepting this impairment was extremely difficult for her. Ma's counsel helped her to alleviate the suffering and the acceptance of other parents who might be have a similar problem. Overall, there were about 7 authors. The one who was with it longest was a man named Aaron Tovrov, T-O-V-R-O-V. He was with it about 15 years. However, he didn't originate it, and he didn't originate the characters. There were so many people involved with it over that period that I really don't know who was initially responsible. I understood there was a young man who brought the idea to the agency first, And the first agency contacts were a man named Mr. Milligan, Lawrence Milligan. He contributed much to the early plots, to the formation of the philosophy. There were many contributions over the years. It's difficult to try to put them all together because Oren's contribution came in these latter years when I think the program was considerably better. What happened later was that we tried to make the villains not so villainous and the heroines not, and heroes and heroines not Simon Pure, to try to show gray area between. And we tried, as I said, to integrate nationalities. We tried to eliminate dialects, the things, you know, the ethnic marks, which were in the early scripts, and tried also to get away from completely impossible situations. In the early years, it had some ridiculous, far-fetched episodes in which to think of a lady of 65 who ran a lumberyard.
What are you going to do about Willie Moore?
My goodness, I just don't know, Schiffer. I don't know what to do with that boy sometimes.
Darn if I let him get away with all that, Ma.
Well, I can tell you he ain't going to get away with it much longer. My lands, he ain't been around the lumberyard for a week almost.
Nope, he ain't. Here, let me open the door for you.
Thank you, Schiffer. I think I know what Willie's fooling around with, too.
You mean that darn cornstalk fuel idea, Ma?
Yeah. And I told him them two fellas, them two big financiers from New York, Mr. Vanderpool, Mr. Dickinson. I told Willie they just are out and out city slickers.
Well, shucks, telling Willie don't do no good, Ma. Not when he gets some kind of idea in his head about making a fortune or something.
I expect it don't do any good just talking to him.
Well, you ought to lay down the law to him, Ma. Darn it, he's just taking advantage of you, that's all.
Well, I am going to lay down the law to Willie Shuffle. I've had just about enough of this here nonsense. The idea, him gallivanting around Main Street, too busy to stop and talk, and neglecting the lumberyard the way he has been.
Gosh, all him. You'd think Willie could see what them two fellas are.
My land, you would think so. They didn't have a single bit of evidence to prove they was getting patents on that cornstalk fuel proposition.
Yeah.
And, Shuffle, you know they wouldn't be letting Willie into something they thought was going to make a whole lot of money just because he helped them a little around town.
Don't seem like they would, Ma. But you think he has been fooling around with this Mr. Vanderpool, Mr. Dixon, on that darned idea of making fuel out of cornstalks?
Well, my goodness, I can't figure out...
The lack of criticism, the lack of any written material on the subject, I think, was a serious loss to radio. There was no real way of appraisal. It's very interesting sometimes to hear the comments of people. People will say, Ma was a busybody, and she kept getting into things that weren't her business, and that she was a constant giver of advice. This is only partly true. She wasn't conceived as a busybody at all. She only came to things when people asked her to. And secondly, she was very chary of giving advice. Her principal function was, as a disinterested observer, to try to guide the people to think for themselves and to wait out problems. And one of her great difficulties was, as I think every parent's difficulty is, to withhold advice. She stood by many times. She stood by as a mediator. She would, in her private conversations with Shuffle, who was a recipient of her confidences, express her personal opinions. But she frequently kept still, and sometimes people were quite annoyed by her silence. They wanted her to take sides. Characters in the story also, the ones, the protagonist and the antagonist, would have strong views of what, and they say, now, Ma, you understand that. I mean, you know perfectly well that that's exactly what you should do. And she would say, no, she would bide her time. It's possibly subtle, but it also is a good deal more credible than somebody who knew every answer.
Now, in the quiet of early evening, we find Ma and Evie Fitz, Ma's older daughter, sitting on the front steps of Evie's home. Evie's just saying...
And you don't feel that Faye's really told you everything, Ma?
No, Evie, no. She came to me and talked, but I don't think she has. It seemed that I wound up doing most of the talking, trying to draw her out.
Could it be that Faye has found out about Gary proposing to Gladys?
I don't think that's it, Evie.
You're sure?
Well, I'm not too sure about anything. I just don't think it's that. I think it's something else.
Well, what if Faye should find out now about Gary proposing to Gladys?
Oh, that'd be the worst thing that could happen. I don't know what that would do to Faye right now.
Ma, what if Faye found it out from somebody else?
Who, Evie?
I don't know. I don't have anybody in mind particularly. I'm just wondering, though, if it wouldn't be best in the long run for you to tell her.
Me, Evie? You still...
Wouldn't it be better, Ma, in case she should find out some way, for you to be the one to tell her first?
Oh, Evie, in one way you're right.
The thing I've never understood is why you haven't told her long ago. I know you left that up to Gary, and he made the decision not to tell her. But why, Ma? Why let him decide?
Because, Evie, that was Gary's place to decide.
But, Ma,
Evie, right here in this little home here, there's you and Willie and Junior. That's a family unit. The foundation that goes to make up what we call society. You've come to me at times, and I've advised you about things in this home. Willie has come to me, too, and I've advised him. But have I ever once taken matters in my own hands where you and Willie are concerned? Made your decisions for you? Told you what you must do?
Well, no, but...
But what, Evie?
That's different, Ma. Willie and I are married and have been for a long time.
Evie, where do you think a marriage begins being complete unto itself? The exact minute that the preacher pronounces you man and wife?
Well, I hadn't thought, but...
Oh, Evie, no marriage. No marriage under the sun can be the 50-50 affair it should be. Unless it gets off to a good start from the very beginning. And that beginning starts with preparation for marriage. It's like a girl learns to cook and sew and keep house long before she ever meets the man she's going to marry. I'm not saying that things can't be learned after marriage, for they can be. It's just harder that way if there's so much to learn otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean, Ma.
I heard a program on the radio, four weeks ago, I think it was. And they had a case of whether or not a woman had the right to tell a sister about her husband going around with another girl. They all agreed on the program that if the wife was to be told, it should come from her own husband himself. They didn't agree that it was right for the husband to be going with another girl, but if the wife was to know, there was a matter for the husband's conscience. See, Evie? There are people who might disagree with you. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong for Gary not to tell Faye. But I'm saying that that's something entirely up to Gary.
I do see what you mean, Mom. Believe me, honestly, I do.
I knew you would, Evie. I knew you would see it. Well, I better be getting on back home now. I don't want to stay away from Faye too long. Leave her there alone too long right now. I'd better be running on, Evie.
Stars overhead. A thin slice of a moon just above the tower housing the town clock. The town clock is striking 10 now as Ma makes her way homeward to Faye. And as Ma passes the little park, she doesn't see the young man sitting on a bench in the shadows waiting. Neither does Gary Curtis see Ma. Gary restlessly lights a match, looks at his watch to verify the time, wondering if Stella's coming. By all means, be listening to Oxydol's own Ma Perkins tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until tomorrow, then, this is Charlie Warren saying so long. And for a wash that's white without bleaching, remember Oxydol, won't you?
And she was frequently doubtful about her decisions, as all of us are. She didn't feel she was infallible. I believe, actually, it was one of the charms of the program, one of the great reasons that almost everybody felt that they knew more than she did. She endeared herself to people by being humble and simple and honest. Aura, and our author, said at one point, she is a fine Christian. She's really what a Christian should be. She believed, first of all, in the guidance of God and the brotherhood of man. She believed in her neighbor, as it says we should. And she did her best to serve him and to love him and to always try to see his point of view, even if it was far from her own. And that we also illustrated that several times within episodes in the script, in which people, strange to Rushville Center. For example, we had at one time a movie producer come to Rushville Center. Tom Wells, Ma's son-in-law, was a writer, and he wrote a novel, which was then made into a picture. And this producer came into Rushville Center, and he was far from the Rushville Center type of person. He landed drunk and fell on somebody's lawn and was discovered there in the early morning, and he carried on amours with the young girls, and he was really far out for Rushville Center. And Ma kept trying to say to the people of the town, our ways are not necessarily the only ways of living. He has a code of his own. And because he is a stranger here, and because he is coming into our society, it's true that he perhaps should adjust to ours more than he is, but at the same time, we should make an effort to understand him. Well, that was a long step for a little town like this, you see, toward the prejudice and the small-mindedness of it. And in that way, I hope that we influenced people not to be so self-righteous and smug. We treated of business within our scripts, and I think that was unusual. Inasmuch as American business preoccupied American society so largely, it was strange that so little was written about it, with the exception of Sinclair Lewis's Main Street and a few things like that. Also, we had a good opportunity, inasmuch as Ma ran a business, the lumberyard, you see. But we had business entering it all the time. And the other thing that I think that people never realized was in the scripts was all the humor. It was much day-to-day humor within the, and most of the things that you hear about the daytime dramas was all their seriousness and the problems and the weeping. And actually, Ma wasn't a weeper at all. She was a very philosophical lady. Many, many scenes within the lumberyard between Shuffle and Willie that were very humorous scenes. We had a funny telegrapher named Fred Sweeney, who was always... We had funny characters within the script. On a fairly simple line of humor, I must say. But at least it was humorous. It wasn't always heavy and grim and oppressive, as I believe the impression is. Also, we didn't have as many long, drawn-out sequences as many people did in the serials. Sometimes, in some instances, the serials did prolong material to an unreasonable length. They tell great stories about somebody being in the revolving door for two or three days or on an elevator or something like that. They're exaggerations, but they come from a fundamental fact. But ours moved at a fairly rapid pace. The storylines rarely went over 13 weeks. They were adjusted somewhat because I suppose, you know, I'm sure other people have said that the idea was that people didn't listen more than, say, twice a week. And so you always tried to regulate the story in such a way that they could catch up. I felt strongly about these things that we should do, about the positive things we should do and the negative ones we shouldn't. I hated the violence. That's another thing we avoided. We rarely had court trials. We had a few court trials. We had very few. We never had any murders.
And now CBS Radio brings you Ma Perkins.
When constipation occurs, more people rely on X-Lax than any other laxative. X-Lax has the qualities many doctors and millions of people want in a laxative.
And now, it is Friday, November the 25th, 1960. She is no longer Oxydol's own Ma Perkins. For Oxydol has left Rushville Center for greener pastures in Videoland. 27 years and 7,065 programs after the hillbilly-tinged episode which opened our memoirs of Ma Perkins, we come to the end of her story. And now for Ma Perkins. Well, what could be more appropriate today than to turn the clock back to join Ma and the folks at Thanksgiving dinner? Ma's got so much to give thanks for. Charlie and Mary Lindstrom are going to be all right. Dr. Ballantyne is going to stay in town. And best of all, the young engaged couple are home for the holiday, Junior and Anushka. Let's join them all. They haven't yet sat down. In the kitchen, we find Faye and Evie and Ma. Listen.
Now see what else. Ice in the pitcher, ice in the glasses, also water in the glasses. Salted nuts, chickalilly, cranberries, pickles, and olives. And... Mm. Oh, yes. Please, nobody let Jackie fill up on pickles. Such a pickle lover I have never experienced.
Our kid's funny.
Yeah.
Johnny's that way about green olives.
Did you look at the rolls, Faye?
Rolls are out. I've got them in the morning.
Oh, well, we'll be sitting down now in just a couple of minutes. Is everybody here?
I had to close the door out there. Judging by the commotion, everybody's here and then some. Oh, wait a minute. Is that the front door?
I didn't hear the doorbell.
Who could hear the doorbell with Shuffle and Willie acting like such clowns out there?
Ma, is it all right to bring some company back here?
Who is it, Gladys?
Mr. and Mrs. Lindstrom are here. They just dropped in to say hello. They're meeting Anushka and her mother and so on.
Oh, Mary Lindstrom and Charlie.
Oh, you go, Ma. You go and say hello. I'll keep an eye on the oven.
Land, well, all right. Don't you want to see them, Faye, Evie?
I do. Here, I'll get out and make room for you, Gladys, honey.
All right, Evie. I'll come out when I get set up, Ma.
I wish they had come earlier. Or on the other hand, later.
I told them about Anushka and her mother, and they said they'd like to meet them.
Sit down, Gladys. You're my favorite sister-in-law. You know why? You don't insist on getting busy in the kitchen. You're willing to sit and look beautiful, which I might add, than which there is none more so.
Complicated syntax, but it finished up pretty nice. Thank you, Pumpkin. And am I asking an unnecessary question, but have you gained a little weight lately?
Me? Well, Gladys, what on earth do you mean?
I don't know, but I'm psychic about such things. Yes or no?
I'll tell you in a couple of days. My bathroom scale's on the fritz. But not a word, Gladys.
Why, you little devil. Oh, Faye. Uh-oh. Here comes somebody. Oh, your husband.
Hey, Ma wants you to come out and say hello to the Lindstroms and Dr. Stevens and Dr. Ballantyne just came in.
Oh, golly, we were just about ready to sit down. Do you want to watch it, Gladys?
Sure, glad to.
I won't bother to take off my apron. I'm a working girl.
You know, I never knew this family was so big. And he gets bigger all the time, doesn't it?
Just what I said a minute ago. And you know what, Uncle Tom, dear? It's very possible that eventually this family might get even bigger.
Why, Gladys Pendleton Perkins, what on earth can you mean? Of course, you're referring to Junior and Anushka.
I wish you and Faye had something to announce. It would make Ma so happy.
Now, all in good time, Miss Snoopy. All in good time.
Hey, Gladys. Ma wants you. Your mother and father just blew in, Gladys. I guess they wanted to meet Anushka's mother.
My mother and father? Oh, all right. Your turn to watch the turkey, fellows.
How do you watch a turkey?
With your nose. When it smells right, just yodel.
I guess that makes you and me the chefs, Willie.
Boy, we never had a Thanksgiving like this one. Holy smokes, did you see the length of that table in the dining room?
Oh, it's just wonderful. Hey, Willie, did you know that the whole civilized world celebrates Christmas and New Year and all that, but the only nation in the world that has a Thanksgiving Day is America?
Listen, do you smell something? I think we better call the girls.
Oh, Linda, right. Goshen, did they leave you here with the oven? Oh, the visitors are saying goodbye now. We'll be sitting down, Willie.
Hey, here I come, Ma.
All right, dear.
Yeah, we were just going to send for you. Okay, Tom, let's get out of here. How soon, Ma?
10 minutes. Tell everybody, 10 minutes.
Hey, look at that turkey. 10 minutes, everybody. 10 minutes.
Now, let me see. Cranberries, olives, chicories, icicles.
We've turned back the clock to yesterday, to Ma's Thanksgiving dinner. The dining room table looks lovely. There's a high chair for the youngest member of the group, Gladys and Joe's daughter, Jess. Ma always likes to have the youngsters sitting right at the big table with the grown-ups. At her right, Ma's put the place for Mrs. Halleck, Anushka's mother. On her left, she's put Junior. And next to him, the girl he's going to marry, sweet Anushka. At the other end of the table, Shuffle will sit, with Gladys on his right and Evie on his left. Willie and Tom are well placed so they can reach the children, and Faye will sit closest to the kitchen door. Let's join them.
No, please, let's hold it down to a mere shriek. Follett, you find the place cards for your brother and your cousin. Janie, darling, you can let go of Follett's hand. You're sitting next to her.
Jackie, tie your napkin around your neck, honey.
Willie, tie Jackie's napkin around his neck.
Okay.
And Jackie, remember what I told you about pickles?
Jackie, see me after dinner. If you've eaten everything on your plate and drunk all your milk, I'll meet you privately with an invention of my own. A pickle tree.
Tom, honey, that ain't funny. He'll do it.
Oh, let him, Evie. Thanksgiving comes but once a year. Now, where do I go?
You're over next to Shuffle, Gladys.
Oh, thank you.
Where's Ma?
Ma's right here. Ma'll be there in a minute.
All right, now, you kids remember what I told you about Grace. You fold your hands and you bow your heads, and you try to think of everything that we give thanks for.
Pickles, Jackie.
Oh, Tom, please. You need any help in there, Ma?
Here I come. Here I am.
Excuse me, dear.
Now, here comes the Gracie children.
Yes.
So little fingers will kindly stay out of the salty nuts and the...
Jackie, likewise, out of the pickles.
I guess we're all here, Ma. Now, who says the grace? Shuffle said it last year.
Well, I was thinking maybe you would, Willie, if you don't mind.
Me?
Oh, what a wonderful idea. You, Willie.
Well.
Go ahead, Willie.
All right. Our Father who art in heaven, we've got such a million things to say thanks for, I hardly know where to begin. But you know what's in my heart. First of all, here we are, all home and together. 2 years ago, Junior was still in the Air Force. We give thanks for the Air Force, but also for Junior being home. And also for the wonderful girl he's going to marry. We give thanks for these wonderful children. Maybe they get into the pickle dish before it's time, but I've got such love for them in my heart, I can't even say no. We give thanks for this food, for all of us being together, for the happiness which lies ahead. I was talking to Ma before, and Ma said it better than I could, so I'll use Ma's words. With the kids, with Junior and Anushka, we get this side of the world going on and on into the future, world without end. And what we leave undone will be done by our kids and their kids. I give thanks for that because I left so many things undone myself. But maybe my boy Junior will do them. He's a college man. And so, we give thanks. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Well, come on.
Come on. Right,
let me help Jamie.
I look around the table at my loved ones, and to me the table stretches on and on, over beyond the other end, past Shuffle. I see faces somehow familiar, though yet unborn, except in the mind of God. Table laden with the fruits of this good green earth. Table set before the Lord. Peace and happiness on every smiling face and in every innocent heart. The strong young men and the pretty young women. someday Faye will be sitting here where I'm sitting, or Evie, or Paulette, or Jamie, or Anushka's child. They'll move up into my place, and I'll be gone, but I find right and peace in that knowledge. Like the great swing of what they say about the stars in heaven, revolving and returning to the place of the beginning. Time without end. Forever. I give thanks that I've been given this gift of life. This gift of time to play my little part in it. Perkins again. This was our broadcast, 7,065. I first came to you on December 4th, 1933. Thank you for all being so loyal to us these 27 years. The part of Willie has been played right from the beginning by Murray Forbes. Shuffle was played for 25 years by Charles Eggleston, and for the last 2 years by Edwin Wolfe. The Fay you've been hearing these past few years has been Margaret Draper, and the part was played for many years by Rita Ascott. For 15 years, our Evie has been Kay Campbell. Helen Lewis plays Gladys, and Tom Wells has been played by John Larkin and Casey Allen. Our director is Richard Leonard. Our writer for more than 20 years has been Aaron Tavroff. Ma Perkins has always been played by me, Virginia Payne. And if you'll write to me, Ma Perkins, at Orleans, Massachusetts, I'll try to answer you. Goodbye, and may God bless you.
And so, after more than 7,000 broadcasts, 27 years, we say goodbye to Ma Perkins. This is Bob Pfeiffer speaking. Next, Young Dr. Malone. Remember, Monday CBS News goes double to 10 minutes an hour weekdays on the hour on the CBS Radio Network.
Reminiscing, I feel. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
Same time, same station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Associate producer, Cam Currier. Special research by Martin Halperin. Our thanks to Ms. Virginia Payne for telling us the story of Ma Perkins tonight.
Be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.